TV psychic astrologer Walter Mercado captivated generations of people all around the world with his flamboyant fashion and campy astrological readings, which were often messages of hope. A household name in Latin America, Walter Mercado just passed away in Puerto Rico at the age of 87. Musician Gloria Estefan called it an end of an era.
Despite his flourished demeanor, Walter Mercado never claimed any gender or sexual identity. When asked if he was gay, he would respond, "I am not gay, because to be gay, I would have to be in love with a man, and I'm in love with the entire universe."
Above all, Walter Mercado wanted people to let go of their inhibitions and shine as brightly as he did, even urging his followers to approach life with tantric sensibility so they could have sex even with a sunset. Of all his eccentricities, Walter was probably best known for his television sign-off, where he wished his fans paz, pero sobre todo, mucho, mucho amor. Peace, but especially lots and lots of love.
Today, queer Latinx historian Larry LaFontaine joins us to take a look at the magical life of Walter Mercado and why this bejeweled, gender and sexually ambiguous superstar meant so much to so many around the world.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Before we begin, let's listen to Walter Mercado talking about living in the age of Aquarius, just recorded a year before his death.
Estamos en la alborada de todavía de la era de Acuario.
We're still at the dawn of the age of Aquarius. For many years, we were in the age of Pisces. But the age of Aquarius is called the Universal Brotherhood. Now, same-sex couples can get married. Now we're completely open so people can express themselves, can accept each other. Times have changed. We are entering the dawn of light.
En esta alborada de luz, de mucha luz. Nada de encerramiento, nada de tapar, nada de closet, nada de ocultar.
We're out of the closet. We are not hiding anymore. We have to be open to the world and tell the truth as it is. And even though there are some people still linked to the age of Pisces, the age of believing, now we're in the age of knowing.
Hello.
Hi, is this Larry LaFontaine?
Yes, it's me speaking.
The artist, also known as Lola von Miramar, Estrella Divina Diamante del Sol y Luna y la Tierra y el Mar.
Hi, Fausto. Yes, it's me.
Hi.
Hola, Larry. Hola.
Hola, Mark.
It's so good to hear your voice. And I couldn't think of anybody we want to talk to more about Walter Mercado's life and amazing career than you.
Ay, Dios mío. Pobre Walter se murió. It's so sad. Poor Walter. He died.
Well, everybody dies. Do you think he saw it coming? He's a psychic, you know.
Oh, that is a very good question. Hopefully not. I would think that, you know, well, I mean, I think many people sort of suspect, or they fear, they know, they might anticipate, especially when you're elderly. He was 87.
Wow.
And he had some health challenges. So who knows? But it's sad. It's sad, but it's beautiful to remember him.
And he died from his kidneys gave out. Is that correct?
Renal failure.
So it seems at Hospital Auxilio Mutuo in Puerto Rico, and his funeral is on Friday, November 8th, and the newspapers have been just absolutely full. The New York Times has already published 3 pieces on Walter Mercado. I can't believe it.
Wow.
For a lot of people who are not familiar who Walter Mercado is, and they're just discovering him now that the Latin American world, the Latinx world, is losing their collective shit over it. And everybody's like, oh my God, Walter Mercado. I loved Walter Mercado. Walter Mercado meant so much to me and my family. And people are like, who's this weird Liberace psychic astrologer from Puerto Rico?
You know, it's funny. I think it's almost like when Selena was murdered in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, everybody was like, who is this woman? Who's Selena Quintanilla? And it turned out that she had like millions of fans, but that she it was a regional phenomenon. Like her fans were in Texas, in the U.S. Southwest, in Mexico. So I think with Walter Mercado, it's similar, although he did some work in English, but he was mostly known in the Spanish-speaking world. But millions of people, I keep reading the number, 120 million people would tune in to see him every day because his program was broadcast, or his segment was broadcast not only in the U.S., but also was syndicated throughout Latin America. And basically, his show ran for 50 years. Starting in 1969, so we were actually celebrating the 50th anniversary of him as an astrologer in the public eye, sharing his predictions and his very campy, unique self on television for thousands of people. In fact, this year, the History Miami Museum had an exhibit of his capes. And he went in August, and it was, he came in like on a huge golden throne, and like people did selfies with him, and he was hilarious because he could be a very charming person, although he could also be a very annoying person. But you know, he was yeah, embraced by many, not by all. There are people who had their political and ideological differences with him, but for many people who love popular culture or who just loved his flamboyant, excessive, ornate style, his way of speaking, you know, his catchphrases, he could have given RuPaul a lesson or two.
Well, where did he get that sense of style from? I mean, it seems to be like it's very much inspired by Liberace.
Hi, that's such a good question. So he was born in Puerto Rico in the early 1930s. By 1950, he was already at the University of Puerto Rico taking dance lessons, and he started in ballet. So perhaps that was part of it. His mother was from Spain. He grew up in Ponce in the south of Puerto Rico. By the 1960s, he had already transitioned into theater. So he had an extensive dance and theater background. And in fact, that's why he was at the television station in 1969. And they were waiting for an astrologer, and the person didn't show up. And then Walter Mercado was playing a gypsy or some sort of Indian prince. He specialized in these androgynous, exotic characters. And then Elin Ortiz, who's married to Charitín Goico, said, we need you to please improvise and do an astrological segment. And so I don't know if his clothing, if his sense of style came from his mother, from being so involved in dance and theater, whether it was something that he himself developed. But what is true is that it was very marked. He had a very dramatic, very recognizable, excessive, very theatrical style that was very recognizable.
I love that his birth as a psychic astrologer was a classic showbiz story where like, hey, kid, the person who is going to do that job is sick today. You're going to go in front of those cameras and you may be going out there a ballet dancer, but you're coming back a star.
It's incredible. It's such a curious story. I mean, but his life is full of coincidences and strange stories. So, for example, it's not clear whether he was born in 1932 or before or after. Some stories say that he was born on a ship, that his mother was coming from Spain to Puerto Rico. Other stories say that he was born on land in Puerto Rico. Some stories say that he was predicting, he was had psychic powers as a child, and that people would line up. Some people felt that he had magical powers. Apparently, he once said that his mother was horrified because he, as a child, ran into a lady on the street and said, "Your child is going to die." And the child died. And the mother was like, "Walter, you can't be saying these things."
Wow.
So in terms of making predictions, you know, a lot of psychics are always kind of, you know, making these very vague statements. And in certainly Walter Mercado's statements, they all had an undercurrent of hope. For speaking to Latinx people, it's, you know, we are very, as you say, we're a culture, a very diverse culture of very different experiences. But one thing we share in common is that we travel a lot. We are the diaspora of Latinx culture. And one common trait, one common need is the desire for hope, to the idea that things are going to be better even when there seems no solution possible. And Walter spoke to that a lot as a performer.
Yes. So he really tapped into positivity in trying to encourage people, trying to have people embrace their identity. In that sense, he was a contradictory and complex figure because in some aspects he was profoundly conservative, and in some aspects he was very reserved and characteristic of a person of his generation born in the 1930s. So, for example, he never came out of the closet, but he always encouraged people to accept themselves for being who they were, and he always encouraged people to accept others. So he did preach a gospel of love. It was not a gospel that was accepting of everybody. So as a very conservative person who moved between spaces in Puerto Rico and spaces in Miami, he was rabidly anti-communist. He opposed the Cuban Revolution. So, you know, so there's some people who really don't partake of that. That full embrace of Walter is just like a spirit of benevolence. But you're absolutely correct about the hopefulness and optimism. In fact, there's a Puerto Rican journalist called Ana Teresa Toro, and she's one of the people that published a piece recently in the New York Times. Her piece is called Walter Mercado, There Was a Duality to Everything About Him. And it's precisely about his optimism, like how Walter Mercado, his message was about empowering people, making people embrace who they were, and of course, try to do things to maximize their chances in life, whether it was taking a bath with champagne or lighting candles or burning incense or praying to different religions. But he was a very optimist person.
Mm. You know, it's funny that a lot of people compare him to Liberace. Walter Mercado and Liberace both shared the same first name. Liberace, in the beginning of his career, went by the name Walter Buster Keys.
Oh.
And in terms of their sense of their identity, they were both very adamant about not naming and claiming their sexual or gender nonconformity. And in fact, in People magazine, People en Español, I think this was probably in 1995 or 96, he was interviewed and asked point blank, "Are you gay?"
Uh-huh.
And his response, I haven't memorized. I'll tell it to you in Spanish, then in English. Yo no soy gay. I am not gay. Because para ser gay, yo tendría que estar enamorado con un hombre. Because to be gay, I would have to be in love with a man. And I am in love with the entire universe. I don't consider myself a sexual being because I don't, for me, a gentle breeze from the sea or a bath full of bubbles are enough to send me into orgasms. I don't have anyone in my bed, not even a little pussycat. around.
That sounds very coy.
It's very campy. He's very coy. Did anybody ever come forward as I'm Liberace's secret gay lover? Or was he a very asexual person? Despite everybody point blank assuming that he was gay and didn't bother asking him because they didn't need to know.
Well, that is really interesting. So I do not know of scandals of people claiming to be his former lover. So, for example, that Juan Gabriel is a Mexican singer who also had this kind of fluid sexuality that was not talked about in public, and there have been scandals about that. But I don't know that has happened with Walter. But Walter did raise a lot of eyebrows in the early 2000s because he declared his love for a Brazilian woman who was his assistant on the television program, Mariette de Toto. And then people felt that he was trying to hide something, that she was his beard. And he insisted that it would be absurd for a person of his age and his stature that he did not need, that he really felt a profound psychic or cosmic connection with her, but they never married. I don't know if they announced marriage plans, but Mariette de Toto. So it was it was bizarre. But many people would ask him, and he would say, yes, what you say, I am in love with the universe, I am in love with all people, or I am an asexual being. Who knows? Maybe now that he has passed away, we might learn more. But you know what? I mean, the people in his generation or earlier generations, they really, that was how you negotiated your identity, and it was through discretion. It was through not asking things that were self-evident. So everybody knew. Well, they knew because his gender expression was profoundly feminine. And so, in fact, people would make fun of him. People would disparage him. But at the same time, he just had so many followers, particularly women, gay men, people across Latin America.
But why were people so you know, my father, I just want to say this anecdote here, and I'm sure a lot of Latinos have the same story, is that their conservative parents made it easier for them to come out as gay because Walter Mercado was crowned. He was called Mr. Television. Before there was the term the king or queen of all media, he really was the queen of all media. And he made it easier for Latin Americans to embrace someone who was gender nonconforming. And so when I came out as gay to my father, he, in his mind, it was like me saying, I am just like Walter Mercado. And so it wasn't so bad.
Yeah. Well, I think that it has to do with being a figure in entertainment. An artist, a performer. So there's always been a sense that people in the arts are slightly different, that they might be queer. People have also seen it as a reflection of his semi-religious stature, or almost like a shaman, a mystic. So, for example, the scholar Diana Taylor sees him in a longer tradition of people who claim to have or go through the world believing that they have magical spiritual powers. So some people have compared him to priests and the way the priests are allowed to wear robes and skirts, and they are marked as different. So I think it has a little bit to do with that. But I think it has a lot just to do with the excess of performance. Right. And also with white privilege, he was a white man who was extremely attractive in his youth. He was highly educated. He was already in media, in television. So you know, they gobbled him up. They saw if you look at the photos when he was a soap opera star in the 1960s, he was drop dead gorgeous. So there were a lot of things going on. It's not simply that he was flamboyant and excessive, but that he was all of these things in a context where people said, okay, we are willing to make one exception. And the one exception is Walter Mercado.
is the anomaly that breaks down the rule. But, you know, did he start off looking so flamboyant, or was there a foundation was already laid and then that stuff got piled on? And so over time, you just kind of grow to accept it.
So that's a good question. But Eliseo Colon Sayas, who is a professor of visual culture and journalism, has an article analyzing early photos of Walter from the 1950s. So most ballet dancers are already negotiating the space of androgyny, even the most masculine ballet dancers. But when Walter started in soap operas, it was a very soft masculinity. Then he was sort of propelled towards leading roles, but they were always very exotic leading roles. So he was the gypsy, he was the Indian prince, he was always swathed in silk and different cloth. And so from there, the jump to the excessive cape-wearing, jewelry-bedecked Walter full of makeup that all of us know had already started in his early dance career.
Mm. Now, all psychics, you know, are kind of known for kind of conning people out of money. But Walter himself got swindled out of his own name, forcing him to change his name to Ashanti Ananda.
Shanti meaning peace,
yeah,
and Ananda meaning happiness.
Yeah.
And part of that was just same way that the artist formerly known as Prince, changed his name to get out of a contract. It was Walter Mercado's desire to get out of the contract and to prevent other companies from using his image and likeness to license products.
Well, and eventually he got the rights to be called Walter Mercado again, which was also, you know, his sexual and gender identity, because he's always like, I'm just Walter Mercado.
I am what I am. Just like Walter Liberace, you know, he was said, I am what I am whenever asked point blank. I mean, in the 1980s, Walter Mercado looked like Rue McClanahan from The Golden Girls on television. He had with that giant screaming red hair and the crown, the heavy makeup, eye makeup, lipstick, hard rouge, jewels rings on every finger and candelabras and, you know, symbols of mysticism. You know, Liberace and Walter Mercado shared that in common, that they spoke to people who were in some ways anxious and scared and calmed them down. And either through music with Liberace or with Walter Mercado with his psychic readings. Like, Walter Mercado never on television was like, you know, your cousin, she's dead. Just give it up. I'm sorry to give you the news.
Like Sylvia Brown.
Sylvia Brown did that, you know?
Well, we talked to Barbara Herr a few weeks ago, who's a Puerto Rican trans performance artist.
Yes.
And she said that the thing about Walter is, like, she's like, he always seemed to give people really good advice. And she goes, I don't know if he was psychic or if this was general broad advice to people, because, you know, she knew him interpersonally and she would see him interact with these people like one on one. And it was always good advice for whatever reason.
Well, I think that maybe he was really encouraging to people to listen to themselves. Like people to literally like pay attention to who they are. He preached the gospel of self-care, and self-care in the sense of being good to yourself, being mindful, like partaking in rituals, somehow trying to slow down the hustle and bustle of everyday life, which leads people to mindlessness or to dull repetition, and sort of saying you need to think, you need to partake of experiences, you need to recuperate, like that sensual aspect, you need to think of your relation through love. But of course, I mean, all of this was mediated by commerce, by a desire to make money. So, you know, he was a master showman. It's interesting, He was everywhere. He had like a telephone line, a television program. He wrote in newspapers. He published books. And some people have actually like sat down and tried to analyze his philosophical, religious thought. And one of the challenges is when you're reading his books, you don't even really know if he wrote it, did somebody else write it? Mm-hmm. And the books somehow lose the effusiveness of his performance. But for the scholar Efraín Barradas, you know, says there's real nuggets. Because, so for example, he says, women are mistreated in society, and it has to be society's goal for women to be equal, for women to be equal participants, for women to have full rights. So there's like these nuggets of radical thought in what is also described as very disjointed, disconnected books that sometimes don't even make any sense. But there were like these little bits of like gay tolerance, accept everybody, abandon hatred. These are things that might seem like platitudes, but that being transmitted on television by somebody who looks so amazing and everybody's paying attention to, it might actually make a difference.
I want to play a little bit of my performance as Faustina, the fire-eating drag princess,
who would
give psychic readings to her audience, very much in the spirit of Walter Mercado. Take a listen.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming to the Feast of Fools. My name is Fausto Fernos. I'm a fire-eating drag princess born in the rainforest of Puerto Rico. What you can do is that you can take the poisons that life gives you, the bad shit that hits the fan day after day. It just never seems to stop. You can take these fires, these poisons, let them be your source of strength. Take the fire and make it your own. Please, say it with me. The fire will not consume us.
The fire will not consume us.
We take the fire.
We take the fire.
And we make it our own.
And we make it our own.
You are all very lucky. Do you know why? Besides being living at the end of the millennium, you are here today to receive my premier Puerto Rican psychic astrological readings. Pisces, swim through the waters of the unknown and wash away your fears of sex. Aries, happy birthday, my dear friends. Today is a wonderful day for anything to happen. Taurus, say hello to that handsome stranger sitting next to you. You'll be glad you did. If your job gives you that much grief and misery, quit it. True happiness will only come from doing what you believe in. Cancer, make sure you touch your breasts and your testicles for any lumps. Leo, me, is that all you want to talk about? You? Why don't you listen to what others are saying for a change? You're missing something very important. Virgo, it's okay not to look like the girls in the magazines, but fortunately, you do look like the girls in the magazines. Libra, before you have the courage to be rich, you have to have the courage to be a bitch. Scorpio, get in touch with your inner El Niño. Sagittarius, you know, astrological readings are really not much anything than fortune cookies. They crumble and they're very inaccurate and they're very subject to interpretation. Capricornio, I can stand on the stage for the rest of my life and eat fire and blab away, but in the end, change will only come from within. It is in your hands, not the stars, not my hands, not your mother's, not your lover's. It is in your hands. Aquarius, this is the dawning of your age, Aquarius. What more do you want? Seize the night and the day. Vamos a comenzar la era, Aquarius.
for you to tell the audience about your experience actually meeting Walter Mercado live in person. What was that like?
It was strange.
It caused you a little bit of distress, huh?
Well, first of all, where were you that you actually got to interact quite a bit with Walter Mercado in person?
Yes. Okay. So it was, my mother was in the hospital in Puerto Rico, and I had gone to Puerto Rico to visit and, you know, to help out. And but then in the evening, there was a book presentation at the University of the Sacred Heart, La Universidad del Sagrado Corazón, which is very near where Fausto grew up in Santurce. And it was the presentation of Mirna Casas, her play Absurdos en Soledad, which is sort of like absurd in solitude. And they had just published the text, and there was going to be like a small presentation and a cocktail. So, you know, people in the theater in Puerto Rico, they tend to go to celebrate and hang out and enjoy each other's company. So I went, you know, I'm thinking, this is amazing. It's like a major woman playwright in Puerto Rico. And another leading theater director, Rosa Luisa Marquez, has some of her students. They're going to do this presentation. So I walk in, and there's like this person, and this person who has like very soft white skin and like very carefully combed like reddish hair and like very elegant clothes. But, you know, I look at this person and I had no idea who it was, because to me it looked like a sophisticated older person. To be honest, I think I might not have even known if it was a man, a woman. They had jewels. They were very elegant.
So you didn't know that it was Walter Mercado the first time
I
you
had
saw
no
him.
Clue. I had no clue who he was until he opened his mouth and started to talk. And his voice is so distinctive. And I was like, oh my God, it's Walter. Well, because he had so much surgery. He had had so many facelifts and like Botox and facial reconstruction. You know, it was like his face was like this canvas that had like it was like an enigma. It was a mystery. So I mean, it was incredible. So I can't believe it. It's like Walter Mercado. And there was like this other major theater figure called Dean Stallas, and their hair matched. They had the same shade of red, because you know that a certain generation of Puerto Ricans love reddish hair. And it turns out that Walter Mercado had been part of the cast of Absurdos en Soledad in like 1961. He had been part of the original cast. So I was like, I'm thinking, Walter Mercado was an actor, and he was in this play by a leading Puerto Rican woman director. So he was there, and then he was telling, before the presentation started, he was telling all these stories, and he was wonderful, and I was laughing, and it was just so lovely. So
you were having a good time, and you, it was, people don't know familiar, you have a very important presence in the crowd.
So, you know, it was like it was amazing. I was truly enjoying getting to meet him, hearing him tell stories. He was so charming. So the play begins, and the play is very funny. It's absurd. It's surreal. It's strange. And, well, I have to say, people who know me know that I have a loud laugh.
It's always fun to tickle Larry. If you see Larry, just tickle him and you get it.
My laugh is a little disruptive, and well, but you know, so then the performance ends, and they have this like lovely cocktail party. And so this young actor, a young performance artist, comes up. His name is Mickey Negron, and he sees me, he sees Walter, like his head explodes. He turns to Walter and he says, "Walter, have you met Larry LaFontaine?" So Walter, like, sort of slightly tilts his head in my direction, but not quite. and sort of looks at me with the corner of his eye, and then he turns his head away and he says, "Oh yes, he's the one with the loud laugh."
How do you say it in Spanish, the way he said it to you? Ah, sí. Ahí está el ahí con está. La risa.
El que se ríe bien duro.
Oh, hard laugh.
And I was just, it was so sad and it was so absurd.
Or do you feel like he rejected you, or he was like being shady towards you, or...
So what I feel that he felt that I had completely overshadowed him.
Listen, if you're going to outshine anybody, it's really amazing. A testament to your charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent, but it is your ability to be in a room with Walter, the great Walter Mercado. And everyone's like, who's Larry LaFontaine?
Oh, so yeah, I wish I had gotten a chance to meet him more. I really wish I had been able to go to the History Miami Museum exhibit. I'm so jealous of my friends who went and took photos, like Julio Capó, who wrote this really fabulous history of queer Miami, and Fredo, who does drag. They all went, and it was such a happening, and the photos of the History Miami exhibit are just gorgeous.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
Because those capes are just fabulous. So I'm glad I got to meet him even once. To my great surprise, so it's been fascinating, like seeing all of the Facebook posts and the social media and all the debates, because people, you know, lots of people adored Walter Mercado. They really felt that he was a key figure. You know, as I said, there's been three pieces in the New York Times. I was thinking that one's called "We Need Walter Mercado's Optimism" by Isvet Verde. But then what also really struck me, which I did not know about, was that he was very conservative. He was a proponent of Puerto Rican statehood. He was rabidly anti-Castro. So that really shook me to learn that he was a more divisive figure than I realized.
Gloria Stefan on Twitter called his passing the end of an era. What era are we talking about here?
Well, he was a proponent of the Age of Aquarius. he really...
And for people who are not familiar with that's a song from Hair, but it was also a concept. The dawning of the Age of an Aquarius is the Enlightenment, the sexual liberation... the anti-war movement of the 1960s and 70s.
So it was sort of a new age, like semi-religious, you know, spiritual moment. But it's also marked by showmanship. It's marked by this excess. I mean, I think that when she says it's the end of an era, it's a recognition that now we are in a different moment where people are more explicit about their sexuality. They're more open. We're in a moment of enormous political strife. So somehow Walter tried, although he failed, to be above it all. I mean, he was clearly a political figure, even if most people don't recognize that or don't know about that. But, you know, now we are in the age of pose. We are in the age of RuPaul's Drag Race. We are in the age of the murder of Kevin Frett, but the appearance of new queer trap and reggaeton performers like Villano Antillano, who are hyper queer, openly androgynous, like playing with gender in very radical ways. So I think that young artists are doing things that are just very different from what Walter did.
Walter Mercado released his last predictions for 2019. In December of 2018, he just passed away, obviously. And so I wanted to read some of them to you and see if they came true for the people who are they correspond to.
Oh, okay.
So let's. What sign? Astrological sign are you, Larry?
I'm Aries.
Okay, so am I. This is what he Walter's last last advice for you and me. Dear Larry, dear Fausto, on the last day of the year, get rid of all those things that you don't use anymore or have an expiration date. Wear combinations of red and white. Fire should always be present, but since planet Uranus will be touching you during the first months of the year, be careful when lighting candles.
Oh.
Carry red accessories or gems. Anything red, bring it closer to you. Red is the color of life. If you can, burn some red dragon incense and spread it throughout your house from back to front.
Wow.
What about Aquarius? Oh. Did any of that appeal to you, Larry, by the way, before we move on?
Oh, well.
What's going on in your life? Does that speak to you?
Red.
So I was born a redhead. Red is the color of Mars, which is a very important planet for Aries. It is a very passionate planet, a very passionate emotion. So red is the color of Chango or Santa Barbara, who is the Orisha or Santeria divinity of war. Red is a color that is associated with passion, with sexual attraction. That it's a very powerful color. I do tend to accumulate too many things and many things that I really don't need. And I really have committed to trying to get rid of some of these things just to make my living space more comfortable. So I will take Walter's advice to heart.
Do all those books in your reading room spark joy?
Oh, no, but I'm so totally not Marie Kondo kind of person. But well, there's something to be said.
Your home is very much like Walter Mercado's set. It's very ornamental. You have imagery and art from various cultures, lots of queer inspirations, and lots of Latin American and Afro-Cuban and Afro-Caribbean imagery. And it's always fun to visit you because there's always something interesting to talk about.
Well, it's very Baroque. It's very excessive. I think that is something that to me, it signals Latino queerness, mariconería, like that sense of kitsch and camp and excessiveness and cursi is a very culturally coded sign. And I mean, I just love collecting things and having little things. And I love all my friends who are artists, and I have a hard time getting rid of things that are beautiful. So they do tend to take over everything. But there is something to be said for simplicity as well.
Jimmy, next.
Why is the word maricón mean homosexual? It also means to bother someone.
Right.
Maricón comes from the word Maria, which is Jesus' mother, Mary.
So sure, but you will remember that Mary is also a synonym for slang for queer in English.
Yeah.
So it's just a sign of the feminine. And of course it is a stigmatized term. It's an insult. It's a slur or a pejorative.
It's Big Mary, right?
Well, Hamburger Mary, not to be confused with Typhoid Mary, it is a trait of marginalized communities to embrace and resignify terms and use them with humor at times, or changing their meanings, especially like flipping the pejorative or negative term.
Okay, so Mark, you were born on February 2nd. You're an Aquarius.
That is correct.
So let's see if this is a reflection of what's going on in your life. And I think, you know, for me and Larry, we're very similar. So yeah, I'm right there with Larry. I'm a pack rat, and definitely I need more red and more life and, color and red in my life. So for Mark, Mark is an Aquarius. So Mark sees and experiences the world in a very different way. And just remind you, we don't buy into any of this astrology one bit. This is for recreational purposes only. Walter Mercado said to Mark, rely on white magic. In your home, be sure to have flowers and scented candles, especially citrus.
Ooh.
You're doing that.
I do that all the time. I boil orange peels with clove and cinnamon on the stovetop all the time.
Break open a dry coconut by smashing it against another coconut and allow the water to spill on you. While doing this, invoke the supreme power and your guardian angel so as to fill your home with happiness and prosperity.
Ooh, I'm getting some coconuts today.
Wear purple. Purple is important. Lavender or even white clothes to welcome the new year. Bathe in a mixture of 7 dashes of different perfumes, mixed with coconut water, mineral water, and holy water. Blessed not by a priest, but by you.
Oh.
Include an amethyst along with your accessories. He always loves the jewels, you know. And carry a prayer card of the Virgin of Candelaria in your pocket or underwear. Does this mean something to you, Mark?
Not really. But I appreciate the optimism there.
I think in a nutshell, Walter Mercado was a daily reminder for millions of people who were feeling marginalized in one way or another to have hope, to take time out of their busy days to cultivate some type of pleasure. If it's not in the clothes and the colors they wear, and the scents, in the meditation, and just clearing their minds. And, you know, even though, you know, psychics and astrologers can be very harmful, I would say that, you know, Walter Mercado gave away a lot of his stuff in publications and television shows that didn't cost any money to access. So in a lot of ways, he was somebody who was bringing a lot of peace and an ability to escape the oppressive Catholic Church environment from Latin America. So in a lot of ways, he kind of was a counter voice to that Catholicism as a pagan symbol.
Well, not only Catholicism, but you have to remember the fastest growing religion right now in Puerto Rico and Latin America, in the United States, is Pentecostalism. And Pentecostalism is very homophobic. It is very conservative. It is very opposed to women's emancipation, to sexual freedoms. So, you know, you have having this person who is challenging traditional religious authority and who is really embracing this metaphor of women's liberation, spiritual connection. What I love so much about the horoscope or the recommendations that you read for Mark, it was like this celebration of ritual. Of sort of like recognizing that your house is a space that can be made more pleasant through light, candles, flowers, that taking a bath and that spending time on yourself. And it like recognizes different senses, like the sense of smell can be, and the sense of touch. If you imagine yourself taking a bath, taking time to respect yourself, to be comfortable with yourself, to center yourself.
What do you, is it fair to use the term Latinx, or as my friend Marcus Quilan Nazario says, Latinch?
Or Latinx.
Latinx. Is it fair to use the gender neutral instead of Latino or Latina in describing Walter Mercado?
I think it is fair to use it, and certainly, well, if you think of the origins, I mean, the term really comes from a position of radical sexual emancipation, of trying to challenge gender binaries in the English and in the Spanish language. I mean, Latinx really comes from Latinas and Latinos who are committed to anti-sexist language, to transforming and challenging patriarchy. It's a radical term. In fact, its radical origins are sometimes lost. Like, people think it's just politically correct, and they don't realize, or they don't know, or somehow they haven't learned that it really is. It's not just a word. It's really proposing a different vision. Not everybody loves it, and not everybody is committed to it. Latina feminists struggled really hard for the recognition of Latina with an A at the end to be recognized as a gender-specific term that is marked by the feminine or by woman, by having to do with women and girls. So I work at a college at the University of Michigan. So students have really embraced the Latinx as a sign of radical inclusion, of expanded notions of gender and sexuality and gender identity. So it's funny because in a certain way, I guess I'm not quite up to speed as my students are, because for them it rolls off the tongue. My Latinx students say Latinx and they just don't even have to think about it twice. I am so accustomed to speaking about Latinas and Latinos that I have to make a very conscious effort to use the X. It's not as natural to me as it is to other people. But it's been like hilarious and fascinating to see the debates about this online, because people are attacking it left and right, and they're really attacking it on grounds that are profoundly conservative and uninformed.
Well, that's like, that's what seems to happen whenever you have a progressive movement developing in a country that's not a Western Anglican culture, is that they say that the concept of gay is something that's colonialist or being imposed on them from Americans. And same goes for Latinx, is that it's something that's the white Americans are pushing on the Latinos.
Well, they're a little bit different. And I think there's subtleties and nuances and really interesting conversations to be had about the work that gay does and why it might be valuable to resist the word gay. I mean, the word gay, it just has traveled and has almost universal meaning. And I don't think it's about rejecting the word gay, but it is very much about understanding the genealogy of the word and what happens when the word gay is embraced uncritically and somehow doesn't capture the nuance or the terror or the suffering associated to other words. Like we mentioned earlier, the word maricón. I'm particularly interested in the word loca. Loca is more like faggot or queen. And for me, I'm much more fascinated by the word loca.
And it literally translates to crazy.
Well, it's crazy woman, but it's also effeminate homosexual. Mm. But it's also an in-group term that people use to refer to each other. It can also be an absolutely horrible insult. So I am much more interested in thinking of Latin American, Latina, Latino, Latinx queerness through the lens of loca than I am through gay. For me, gay is like tired. I mean, it's tired because people keep forgetting that it's so marked. Like, gays are not universal or ahistorical. Gays are very specific, and it has to do with 1950s and 60s United States. So Latinx is part of an experiment in English, but also in Spanish, to try to find gender-neutral, anti-patriarchal language. In Spanish, it would be very hard to pronounce the X, So in Spanish, feminist, queers, activist spaces, people have been using the E much more when they speak. And in fact, it's
what do you mean the E?
So instead of using O or A at the ends of words, you simply, well, there's a couple of possibilities. Latine.
Latine.
And instead of saying, you change the vowel at the end of every single gendered word.
So gato is gati?
Gate?
Well, le gate. Instead of having to say gato or gata, you say gate. And then so for some people, that sounds too much like French.
That sounds crazy. Loca. Well, hold on a second. So what is the proper... I guess article, right? The el or la when saying the word Latinx, because that's at the core of all this is that Spanish is a gendered language, and even objects that don't have a sex are still assigned it. So pencil is el lápiz and street is la calle.
Yes, but at the heart of all of this is that language is alive. Mm-hmm. Language is alive and language changes. And language responds to society. So, for example, in the ridiculous article posted on USA Today, the conservative Latino, and he's definitely Latino, the Latino author claims that the Royal Academy of the Spanish Language has not recognized feminist alternative gender markings. Well, of course they haven't, because they are the most conservative instantiation of the Spanish language. So we are talking about radical queer and feminist people in English and in Spanish experimenting and proposing with alternatives. In a certain way, you can say that there is a continuity or bridge between Walter Mercado's transgressive gender expression and what some people are trying to do with language. There's a really beautiful short piece by Alan Pelaez Lopez, who is an indigenous Mexican poet. I want to read. So Alan Pelaez Lopez, it's about the X, you know, the X being... the X is a sign of trauma. It is a sign of struggle. It is a mark of exclusion. It is not. So this is what he says. So Alan Pelaez Lopez says, the X in Latin X is a wound, not a trend. And those are very powerful words. The X in Latin X is a wound, not a trend. Mm. So what that means is that it is acknowledging that there is an inherent violence in language and society, and that language is a space of struggle. It is a space where different things can be tried out. And, you know, so as I tell my students, they're so committed, they're so comfortable with Latinx. And then we start reading a bunch of books and articles that came out 10 years ago when the fad was the at sign. So it used to be Latin at with the at sign. And that lasted like all of like 1 year. But there's all of the mm-hmm.
Sounds like there's a gay bar in our neighborhood called Atmosphere that uses the at sign from your email address as the first letter.
So, well, 10 years ago, Latin at is really where it was at, because people were, you know, people are creative. People are struggling to transform the world. We want to envision the possibility of change. And so that the X, I mean, the real question for me is, will the X stick? And well, clearly there's resistance because people are attacking it left and right. Mm-hmm. But I think that in Latin America, where people are writing with the X, in the United States, where Latinx people are speaking the X out loud, it's a real desire to envision a possible change.
Well, I remember in the early 90s, queer Latinx activist at my school, Pedro Zamora, he used to say la taxi. He used to flip the gender articles or pronouns for everything.
Yes, yes. And then
Instead of edotoxy, it was latoxy.
Well, not only that, they so some people feminize everything. So they talk about la munda instead of el mundo. So the world becomes feminine. So, you know, sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's strange. As with anything that is new, sometimes it's just confusing.
Now, here's an idea that I want to lay on you. Any branches that don't bend, break. And when a language becomes so rigid that it can't evolve, people will stop using that language. So in a lot of ways, you know, if we want people in the future to be speaking Spanish, to be communicating in Spanish, we need to make Spanish
more like English.
Evolve to reflect our values and ideas that the rest of the world wants to have. And when the language can't adapt to that, it is going to suffer.
No, but language is constantly adapting. It's people who don't adapt.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The people refusing to allow that language to evolve is going to result in it not being used.
But who are those people? There's always competing versions of language. There's always multiple dialects. And the question is, which are recognized as legitimate, valid, which are given prestige, which are taught in the university, which are recognized as marks of people with certain power. And because young people are constantly transforming language, inventing language, and taking language in other directions. So what is so perverse and terrible is, for example, I mean, language dies when young people are not allowed to speak their languages. That is the history of linguistic terrorism in the United States against indigenous populations. Spanish was banned for many Hispanic or Latino, Latina, Latinx youth. There was corporal punishment. There was sanctions for children who tried to speak Spanish in school. Well, not only of children. Nowadays, you can be fired. People have been fired from their jobs because they're speaking in Spanish. Sometimes people who are hired precisely because they are bilingual. So language is racialized. Language becomes part of a broader move against immigrants, against people from other countries, against people who are not Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, white in Trump's America. So I think language is a basic human right. We have the right to speak our language. It is a right recognized by people who talk about not only civil rights, but human rights. So language changes, and there is always a tension, and there has to be a dialogue between those people who want language to be static or to remain the same, and those people who feel that language has to change.
Honey, I could have said it better myself. How can Puerto Ricans be seen as part of our society here in the United States? Because one thing that I've experienced, and I know you've experienced this yourself, is the trouble with being, you know, when we show ID and our ID is from Puerto Rico, and that government official's like, I need some American ID. And then they start, you know, accosting you that you're not an American citizen. There's a guy, Jose Guzman Payano, who in Indiana, in West Lafayette, he was just trying to buy some cold medicine.
Yes.
And the clerk was like, not only refused to sell it to him, but demanded to show that he was a legal American citizen and threatened to call the police on him. And then the guy's like, you know, I'm surprised nobody was like, do you have a smartphone? Look up Wikipedia. And it happened to me one time. I was applying for a bank loan, and the loan officer said, I'm sorry, but we don't offer loans to foreign nationals. And I'm like, Puerto Rico is part of the United States. And he's like, no, it's not. And I'm just like, call your manager. And this happens, you know, I have so many stories about people in that situation where they're just like, Puerto Ricans are not seen as American citizens. What do you make of all that?
Well, I mean, I think there's very specific reasons for that. it has to do with U.S. imperialism and the colonial relationship between Puerto Rico and the United States. It has to do with the insular clauses that manage the relationship, not only between Puerto Rico, because remember, the Northern Marianas, Guam, the U.S. Virgin Islands, there's all of the people that live in the U.S. territories are subjected to this profound ignorance. It is an ignorance that is systematic, that is built into the system through the exclusion of our knowledge about who we are. You know, so students don't learn. People don't know. They don't know because it's not taught. Sure. And it's not taught because there's no interest. There's no interest in having people understand, because if they understood and they knew, they would have to acknowledge that it's a profound injustice.
But even in the way we describe the issue, like, I hear a lot of Puerto Ricans saying, like, well, Americans don't understand that Puerto Ricans are Americans. And I'm like, what you're talking about is North Americans have a hard time understanding that Puerto Ricans are Americans. Like, the term American is interchangeable, even in our culture, as we're talking about, you know, people from North America.
Well, it's a recognition that Puerto Ricans think of themselves as a nation, much as indigenous people in the United States think of themselves as a nation, or the way that people in Spain understand that there are multiple nations as part of the Spanish state, that to be Basque or Catalan or Galician is different from being Spanish, that they are part of Spain, but they are also something else. And so the question is how to change this. Well, it requires like profound education and activism, because there's a lot of people very invested in ignorance. There's lots of people very invested in having most Americans not understand what is happening in Puerto Rico right now, the way that vulture capitalists are taking over the entire island.
Capitalists? Or are you calling them vulture?
Vulture capitalists.
That's so good.
Right, so there is a depopulation of Puerto Rico going on right now, having to do with over 10 years of economic crisis that were only intensified as a result of Hurricane Irma and Maria in 2017. So, you know, there's thousands of abandoned homes in Puerto Rico. Schools are closing down. Hospitals are closing down. The Puerto Rican population in Florida is increasing exponentially. And it's very similar to what happened in Hawaii. It's very similar to what happens in many locations in the Pacific. So that it's real estate speculation. It's like, how do you get rid of these people who we really don't want, so that we can do whatever we want with the place where they live? So sure, there's really
it's a
good
form
books.
Of economic colonialism.
So there's really good anthologies. For example, Marisol Lebron, Yarimar Bonilla have been publishing, like, a new book just came out about the impact of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. What's going on? Naomi Klein has a book. What's going on in Puerto Rico is a scandal. It is a scandal of how do you get rid of Puerto Ricans? How do you create conditions in Puerto Rico that are so unfavorable, they're so terrible, that people just say, you know what, it's unlivable. So we can allow multimillionaires just to take over, turn Puerto Rico into a giant resort, build their mansions. The University of Puerto Rico is being destroyed. The Junta de Supervisión Fiscal, the Fiscal Control Board, is defunding the University of Puerto Rico, one of the leading universities in Latin America, which was mostly sustained by government funds. That does not correspond to neoliberal models. So it's a real tragedy what is happening right now.
But I thought, you know, all those protests, I mean, Ricky Martin stood on the top of a truck and waved a rainbow flag. Was it all for nothing?
So that is so interesting. So Walter Mercado, would tell us that we have to be optimistic and we have to recognize the strength of moments. Walter Mercado actually spoke against the former governor, Ricardo Rosselló. He understood that Puerto Rico needed a transformation. But it's a real question mark. So that major activism over the summer of 2019, which managed to kick out Ricardo Rosselló and his administration because of their racist email exchanges, was a very positive sign, but it's certainly not enough. Like, a lot more has to be done.
It's just a scratch of the surface. Larry, it's always so good to talk about, Puerto Rican culture, queer culture, Latinx culture. There's a movement to not even use the word Latinx because that's colonialist, that's European, and they're looking for a native word, an Aztec word or a Taino word or something to describe who we are, this diverse group of people. But yet, no word, no consensus has popped up yet. But I'm sure it will.
Well, but I don't think so because Latinos, Latinas, Latinxers, you know, we are a very varied group. There's 17 Spanish-speaking countries in Latin America. Each country has a different history, different indigenous populations. These are coalitional terms. These are terms that people create and use strategically. They are terms that become co-opted. There's no outside. There is no magic fix. What we can do is maintain a constant critical practice that is aware of the possibilities and the limitations of everything and try to do the best that we can. And if you use a certain term, just be very aware of its limitations and its possibilities and be open to the possibility that in the future or different people might have different ways of saying the same thing. And it's always really good just to ask people, how do you want to be identified? What are the words that you like or that you use to talk about yourself? And just try to respect that. For me, it's as simple as that.
Atabey te bendiga. Atabey is the Puerto Rican Taino goddess, the supreme deity who created, humanity. And Larry, have you ever had a bag of Doritos? I know Walter Mercado was a spokesperson in 2016 in this bizarre, outrageous, I don't understand how it was made, with a soundtrack, Right Said Fred, I'm Too Sexy for My Body, which is a camp classic. And they say, see Walter Mercado eyeballing in a fashion store, not a new gown, but an astronaut suit. And he fancies himself is an astronaut, goes into outer space, and just like 2001 Space Odyssey, travels back in time, and he becomes a younger version of himself before going into the stars. And I think, ultimately, if anything that Walter Mercado ever made, I think that's probably one of the craziest, most wonderful things, that ad campaign he did with Doritos.
It's funny. I've never eaten Doritos in outer space.
I'm sure you've had a bag on Earth, though.
Yes, I've had many bags of Doritos. I even like Cool Ranch Doritos. But I always have to use my hand to get the Dorito from the bag into my mouth.
You can't just suck it up in the vacuum of space.
Not yet.
Well, Larry, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing with us your story of meeting the great Walter Mercado. That's one of my favorite stories you tell.
Thank you, Mark.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
You're a Spanish professor of queer Latino studies, Latinx studies, at the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor.
Yes. I teach Spanish, American culture, and women's studies at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. And you can find me here.
And Madonna's daughter, Lourdes, is a student there.
She probably graduated by now,
She's gone by now, but, she went to school there.
I know that she started her degree, and I do not know if she completed her degree.
But just
I,
like I her don't. Mom. pursued a career in entertainment halfway through school. You know, she's there's this wonderful video footage of her dancing in Madonna's new touring show, Madame X, that you definitely want to check out if you get a chance.
Oh, okay.
Comes to see you. It's a celebration of Portuguese and Colombian and Latinx culture. And it's probably one of Madonna's most least Madonna-like shows, but at the same time, the most, you know, there's not a lot of references to her pop music in it. I would say like 90% of it is all new music that you've never heard of before.
Oh.
And has a lot of just kind of the same way that Liberace traveled with the Trinidadian drummers. Or I'm thinking of Paul Simon traveled with the singers from
Africa.
That, you know, Madonna's traveling with performers from musicians from Portugal and Colombia that are really extraordinary. And it's not just her on stage. It's a very Pan-American look at music.
Oh.
And it's extraordinary. I urge people to definitely check it out.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Larry, thank you so much for talking to us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Of course, Larry. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Larry LaFontaine lives in Ann Arbor in the state of Michigan. Mm. Michigan. The University of Ann Arbor in Michigan.
You can watch Larry in our first ever episode of Cooking with Drag Queens, where we make tostones.
Tostones.
Yes.
Tostones.
And now we're
what's
got, like,
that?
Is it salty? We've got at least 30 videos up there now, and the latest one with Muffy Fish Basket is out.
And Jade Sotomayor and Monica Beverly Hills, two fabulous Puerto Rican drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race.
That live right here in Chicago.
And next week, it's Peaches Christ, San Francisco's drag impresario, horror hostess, and all-around glorious ghoul friend.
And you can check that out on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/feastoffun. I want to remind you folks, we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to talk to fine people like Larry LaFontaine without your help.
I want to leave you guys with the words of great Walter Mercado. Los deseo mucha paz, pero sobre todo mucho, mucho amor. And in English, that is, I wish you lots of peace, but more than anything, lots and lots of love. And that's something we can all take to our, take that, everybody say love, as RuPaul says. That's something you can take everywhere. Thank you, Walter Mercado, for making the world a more glamorous, more spiritual and kinder place. Aww. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bendiciones para todos y que Dios me los bendiga a todos hoy, mañana y siempre. Y que reciban de mí siempre paz, mucha paz, pero sobre todo mucho, 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 mucho amor.